From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. And since it's Friday, it means it's our reporter roundtable. We will get you up to date on the news that made headlines in this next hour. So today, our panel includes Carly Flandreau with Idaho Ed News, Ian Max Stevenson with the Idaho Statesman, Christina Lords, the editor-in-chief of the Idaho Capital Sun, and Melissa Davlin, host of Idaho Reports on Idaho Public Television. Hi, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Hello.
Oh, happy Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. We are less than 2 weeks away from Idaho's primary election. So, Christina, that's where I want to start today. In particular, can we talk about the money that's been raised in some of these races? Because you were just recently had a report that some legislative candidates are actually surpassing the amount of money that's been raised in the past.
Correct. Yes. We just released a story outlining some of the top folks that are bringing in campaign finance dollars. And our reporting found that in early April 2022, our reporting showed that Idaho legislative candidates have raised collectively about $900,000 ahead of the May primary election. Wow. But at the end of this March this year, legislative candidates have raised more than $3.8 million. That doesn't even include April's totals, which should be reported to the Secretary of State's office today, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's the 10th of every month where these campaign finance reports are due into the Secretary of State's office. So donations are pouring into some of these legislative races more than I've seen in the past, more than some of the political movers and shakers that we talked to have in the past. And I'll just pull out one race in particular that's bringing in quite a bit of money, and that's for the Republican Idaho Senate race in North Idaho's Legislative District 1. This is a seat that represents Bonner and Boundary counties, and candidate and former Idaho legislator Jim Woodward, excuse me, has raised over $113,000. And this is up until March, so we don't have the figures for April yet. But while his opponent and current Senator Scott Hernan has raised over $101,000. So this is a very competitive race between two people who have run against each other before. There's a lot of money going into this particular campaign. And according to those campaign finance records, Woodward and Herndon have received most of their campaign money from individual donors by a wide margin. And most of those donations have come from within Idaho. So we break down more on that race and other really competitive races in our story at idahocapitalsun.com. We have some good interactive tables where you can actually select your own legislative district to see how much the candidates in your district have raised. And then I always really encourage folks to check out the idahovotes.gov website, which is run by the Secretary of State's office, which has really great searchable resources for Idahoans who are looking at where donations are coming from. I just think it's really important to be an educated voter, to understand where people are getting their money to run for these offices, who might be influencing them. You can see which companies are donating, which individual people are donating, which other legislators or politicians are giving to each other. I think that's always really fascinating to see. But all of that is public record. It's all public information. It's all available at idahovotes.gov if you're interested in kind of digging into your own legislative races and seeing who's giving who how much money.
Hey, Melissa, what are your thoughts on the amount of money that's being raised? I mean, it seems like this is kind of a trend, right? That in every election cycle, it seems like more money is being raised. So how surprising is this? And I would assume maybe we're just going to keep seeing this happening in the future.
Yeah, we talked about this on last week's show, that these races, some of them are bonkers expensive. You know, obviously, it's Legislative District 1 that Christina just talked about stands out, but there are several more that are tens of thousands of dollars. And I do think it's a trend. I think this is where we're heading. When you look at independent expenditures, which are, you know, the flyer campaigns are often funded by independent expenditures from outside groups. Those add tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars more to some of these races. And I think that's where we're heading. I think that people have mixed opinions on whether that's a good or bad thing. I will leave that philosophizing to them. But I don't think there's any going back from this once we're starting to drop this much money on legislative races. I don't think the next cycle is going to be like, all right, guys, let's tone it down a bit. That's not going to
Right.
happen.
Yeah, we've spent enough. It's okay. Yeah, I would agree with that sentiment. Carly, before we dive into some of the stories that you've been working on, could you take a little bit of time and tell us more about the Education Reporting Collaborative that Idaho Ed News is a part of?
Yeah, for sure. So it's a group of local and national news outlets that come together each year to write about education with a solutions focus. So some of our partners include the Associated Press, the Christian Science Monitor, and the Hechinger Report. And then we've got local partners are the Seattle Times, the Dallas Morning News, newspapers out of Alabama and South Carolina. And this is our first year participating, and our focus is on how the childcare crisis affects working parents.
Okay, so with that said, Carly, I know during this next hour, those are a lot of the topics you're going to focus on. So I want to talk a little bit about one of the two stories that you've worked on so far. And this is about how some schools are actually opening daycares, but this is in order to retain teachers.
Yeah, and this is happening in a couple places around the state, but for my story, I focused on a school in Nampa. It's Endeavor Elementary. And their principal, Heather Yarbrough, was seeing some, well, she was just having some teacher retention issues, largely because the teachers there were pretty young. And that school would host a lot of student teachers. And then it kind of created this pipeline where those teachers would then be hired on. And so it just worked out that a lot of them were early in their careers starting families. And as they had children, they would start to drop out of the workforce to provide care. So to solve that issue, she said, let's start a daycare here at school on campus. And so that's what they did. It's in the fourth year and it's definitely helped with retention. I think 12 of the school's 30 teachers have children in the program. And they're able to pop down and have lunch with them or feed their infants or just check and say hi and see how they're doing. So the teachers just love it and they say it's a game changer.
Well, it sounds like it, right? I mean, and as we know, Carly, and you've reported on this so much in Idaho Ed News, is that we do have a teacher shortage. So if this is one solution, it seems to be working.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another factor is Nampa is surrounded by a lot of other districts that pay teachers more. And so this is a way that this school district can offer something that other districts don't.
So, Ian, let me bring you into the conversation because Real ID is definitely getting real in Idaho. And first off, can you tell us what Real ID is? So let's start with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Real ID is a federally, nationally standardized form of verifying people's identity for state-issued driver's license and IDs. And so it was first implemented in the years after 9/11 when national security agencies were trying to kind of boost the standards for how we verify who people are in order to fly on airplanes and things like that, and get into federally protected buildings. And so it's an effort by the national government to kind of standardize how people verify who they are for their state-issued driver's licenses.
And this has kind of been pushed back a couple of times here in Idaho, but come next year, I believe what next year at this time, what will happen if you don't have real ID in Idaho?
Yeah, so this is something I encourage people to take heed about because you don't want to get caught up in an airport without the right identification. So, and I would imagine that listeners, if they've had to renew their driver's license recently, they may have come across this already. But the Real ID program, it has something called a STAR card, and it's basically your Idaho driver's license. You can opt to get a standard driver's license or this STAR card. It's the same cost, but it has slightly more paperwork you have to bring initially when you verify who you are at the DMV. And if you don't have a STAR card come next May, so that's May 7th, I believe, 2025, you will not be able to use your driver's license to get through airport security to get to your commercial flight at the Boise Airport or any other airport. That doesn't mean that you have to have a STAR card. If you prefer traveling with a passport, or there are certain other federal IDs, military IDs that some people travel with. But by and large, driver's licenses, most people carry those around. That's kind of the general way that most people get through TSA. And you won't be able to do that if your ID isn't Star Card verified come next May. So this is something you can get when you renew your driver's license, or you can also, if you're kind of still a few years out from needing to review your license, the DMV says you can get a duplicate so that if you're flying and planning to fly anytime after May next year, you won't get held up in an airport.
And so, Ian, now I'm thinking about anyone under the age of, well, I'm in Idaho, you can get your license at 15, but what about younger kids? I mean, like I have a 12-year-old. I mean, he has a passport, but throwing that out, if he didn't have that, what if you don't have a driver's license? I mean, does every single person have to have this type of identification?
So that's a good question. So younger kids could still use a passport, and you can also still use other forms of ID. Like there's a passport card that people can use that's like a smaller version of a passport that you can get into Mexico or Canada with. That would work. And I believe the state also issues a Star Card approved ID that's not a driver's license.
Okay,
No,
but
that
so
doesn't.
everyone
Yeah.
has to have one then. So everybody has to have one.
The Star, yeah, well, yeah, you have to have a ID that will be sort of meet these standards to get through security.
Okay. And this is for all airports, right? So this isn't just Idaho specific because I'm thinking of, like if you think that you don't need it and you're going to need it though at other airports as well. So it's not just in
Yes.
Idaho.
Yes, this is a national program, and because of that, it's taken a, as you mentioned, Idaho. The legislature was pretty reluctant to get on board with this initially. The initial deadline for when this was supposed to go into effect was actually in 2008, so quite a while ago, over a decade ago. And it's been delayed because states like Idaho and a number of other states didn't want to implement the program initially. And Idaho actually prevented the Idaho Transportation Department from carrying out this requirement. So there was the federal government was pretty lenient with that. They delayed it a few times, but now they say this is a hard deadline, and so they say they won't be delaying it any longer past next year.
And I will say this. I mean, when I got my license renewed, I don't know, a couple of years ago, it was super easy. They ask you at the DMV if you want the Star Card, and I think it's a few extra dollars more. And then my oldest, who's 16 today, by the way, when he got
Happy
his
birthday.
license, yeah, I know, happy birthday, Ben. But when he got his license last month, again, they just asked right at the DMV if he wanted the Star Card. So for anyone who's wondering like how difficult this is, it's actually a pretty easy process if that helps at all. So
Yes,
just FYI.
and they told me it's actually the same price for the Star Card as it is for the standard ID, so it won't cost anyone anymore.
Yeah, and honestly, it was just they ask, and I mean, and then you have it. So it's super simple. So, Christina, I think it's really obvious to say that Idaho is a red state with Republicans holding a super majority in the legislature. However, Democrats are, I mean, literally doubling their efforts by trying to make some inroads. Can you explain what they're doing this election cycle?
Sure. So the Idaho Democratic Party has made it a priority to field more candidates in more legislative races in the last year or two. And this election cycle, we've seen that that effort has really paid off. So here's the statistics. There are 87 Democratic legislative candidates running in the May primary. That's a drastic change in compared to the 45 that made it to the 2022 general election. So you're right, they've essentially doubled the number of people that they're running. It's important to note and remind voters that in a primary election, voters are determining who's the best candidate within that party, right, to send on to the general election. So Republicans come May 21st in the primary are voting for their top pick of GOP candidates, while Democrats are voting to pick their favorite Democratic candidate, right? Then in the general election, the voters will get the ballot and ask them to choose between their Republican or Democratic choice. But the Democrats that we interviewed, many of whom, they said that they're running for office for the first time, and they were said that they were motivated or driven to run because of their concerns related to some of the legislation that we've seen the past few years pass through the legislature, including all of this talk about library and materials. Obviously, abortion and reproductive rights have become a main concern for Democrats, and just how we're talking about public education. But yeah, the surge nearly doubles the amount of Democratic candidates running for legislative office. And I think it's important to note that, you know, we talked to Representative Dustin Manwaring of Pocatello. He's a Republican. And he said, you know, this is his exact quote. He said, "I don't believe that this will translate into more real competition in November because it does not change the demographic of electors who are likely to vote in each of these legislative districts." So his point is that it's one thing to field candidates in these races, but it's another thing to get enough voters to vote for them and win these elections. So, you know, I think the Democrats are very proud of this. They've worked really hard. They've sent out text messages and all sorts of things to see if people are interested in running, to really create that base of candidates. But I think we'll see in November that, like you said, Idaho is a very Republican leaning state. It's been a super majority in the legislature since the early 90s. And so it'll be a tough uphill battle for these Democrats to overcome their Republican opponents in November.
But Christina, talk about a part of the story where you spoke with Jacqueline Kettler. She's a political scientist at Boise State University. We've had her on our program here.
Yeah.
Because I think what she said was very interesting about, but it builds up a base, right?
Right.
Talk about what she was saying with that, because we may not see the effects of this come November. Maybe we won't see the effects of this for a decade, right? But talk a little bit about kind of what she was saying in regards to these maybe stepping stones.
Yeah, she said that having more candidates in the race is just overall good for voters for a lot of reasons, including just that, you know, kind of obvious, there's just more overall choice for people to make. But it also makes a difference because it helps keep our elected officials more accountable by having more conversation about perhaps what that incumbent has or hasn't done through candidate debates or candidate surveys, or being able to compare, here's what this Democrat is saying that they'll do if they're elected, compare that to what the incumbent has done while they're in office. So, you know, I think it's just one of those things that if people have options, it can energize people who may want to vote democratically, but there hasn't been a candidate for them to vote for. And it just may push the Republican candidates to talk more about the issues that the Democrats are interested in running on and challenging them through these debates or through these candidate surveys and things like that that go out around this time. So I think her point is really like more engagement is always good for the electoral outcomes because we're talking about the actual issues more. There's more choice for people to show up to the voting booth and actually say, this is actually what I do feel. I want to vote for a Democrat, or I do want to vote for a Republican and make sure the Democrat doesn't get in. You know, it just really, instead of just the status quo, it challenges that and it forces people to show up and talk about their voting records and things like that.
Yeah, and I think those were just such good points that were being made. Ian, let's stay with elections for a little bit longer. Can you talk about Kenyon County's Legislative District 10 and why this is one to watch? Even though, I mean, it's dominated by Republicans, it's still a necessary race to watch.
Yeah, so District 10, this is parts of the cities of Middleton, Starr, and Nampa. And there are a number of races here that are interesting. One is House Speaker Mike Moyle. He's one of the longest seated members of the legislature. And of course, the House Speaker, very powerful lawmaker. He's facing a challenger in the Republican primary, Rachel Hazlip. This is actually a rematch of a previous race from 2022. So that'll be, you know, she's a very young candidate and running against the House Speaker. That's an interesting race to watch, I think, what happens there. And then also prominently the Senate race on the Republican side, the primary there. Senator Tammy Nichols is facing a challenger, Lori Bishop. And I think this is, you know, an interesting race. One thing, obviously, as we've talked about on the program. Idaho is a very Republican state, so a lot of the kind of really important decisions about which candidates end up making it to office are made in the Republican primary. And something that we saw in 2022 was that some kind of more hardline or far right conservatives picked up seats in some cases in the legislature. Senator Tammy Nichols, I think, is one of the most conservative lawmakers in the Senate. She's a member of the Freedom Caucus. And Lori Bishop is sort of a more traditional, maybe more politically moderate challenger. And so it'll be interesting to see now, a couple of years later, how a race like that turns out.
Well, and to see which way kind of it swings, right, Ian? To see,
exactly.
do voters decide to kind of, do they take the more, you know, quote, moderate Republican line, or how, you know, far right are they going to go? So, that seems to me what would make this interesting to watch.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Melissa, you literally just came back from an interview, and this is about a new study that's examining motherhood in Idaho. I'm so curious about what you found out about this, because it also looked at social and community supports that impact moms' mental well-being. So tell us about the study and what you've learned.
Yeah, I walked directly from my interview on set with Shannon McGuire of Spark Communications. About this study, it is Built with Care, Unifying Communities Through Motherhood, and it is a partnership with Gallup. And they talked to more than 4,000 Idahoans, and in there about 1,400 Idaho moms about how supported they feel and what that support looks like, and how they feel about access to things like outdoor recreation and parks and mental health care and fresh fruits and vegetables and childcare, my goodness. And so conversations that we know affect families and children, this looks at it from the mom's perspective. And so often, as Shannon pointed out, we have these conversations through the lens of children or through community health as a whole. And those are all really, really important. For this, they spoke directly to moms to figure out, you know, whether they felt comfortable asking for help from neighbors, whether they felt supported in their communities. The results were pretty interesting. And we're going to link to the report directly on our website. You can find that at idahoreports.org. And my conversation with Shannon wraps up tonight's show on Idaho Reports. It airs Friday nights at 8 p.m. on Idaho Public Television.
So, Melissa, what were some of the things that Shannon pointed out that moms are saying? I am very curious about that, because you're right. I mean, so many of these studies, you know, yes, they look at how does it impact the child. And yet, you know, it at least I'm speaking for myself as a mom. So much of that burden, though, of childcare, right, is placed on the mother. And then you put work on top of it. And I'm highly privileged. And I still, especially when my children were young, felt such a burden and almost being alone.
Yeah, with childcare, I mean, that stood out to me too, that, you know, with my third child now has been probably the biggest stressor in my entire life. It's, you know, definitely compared to the first two kids that I have, trying to find reliable and affordable childcare with so many childcare centers shutting down. Compared to national studies that they've looked at, Idaho moms feel like they have less reliable access to childcare. The same was true for quality health care and mental health care. And so Idaho seems to be, at least from the mother's perspective, lagging behind the national conversation about those supports. Now, it wasn't all bad news. Compared to national moms, Idaho moms had great things to say about their access to things like fresh produce, outdoor recreation, public parks. We have better things to say as Idaho moms than national. But there were so many layers to this. It's a really interesting report. And the other thing that stood out to me is it's not all public policy related. Shannon really looked at this from a micro level. You know, it's not just about what policymakers in DC or in Boise can do to support mothers and therefore children and families. Some of it is as simple as creating a culture where neighbors feel like they can ask for help, where they feel like they can offer help. It really is a community-based conversation as well as a public policy one. And that's part of what stood out to me about this really interesting report.
Well, looking forward to watching that tonight. Carly, this kind of goes right into one of the stories that you did as part of the Education Reporting Collaborative, because you wrote about an Idaho couple. They're both teachers, but they had to stagger their FMLA to care for their newborn. So talk to us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so to give a little bit more background for the project, we're looking at how the childcare crisis affects working parents. At the same time, we know women are more likely to be impacted by that, stepping out of jobs or changing their professional role in some way to provide care. And we also know that teachers nationwide and in Idaho are about 3/4 women. And so it certainly affects the teaching career. And I wanted to talk to some teachers who are experiencing the impacts of that. So I talked to a couple in Pocatello, Mike and Jane Roberts, and they teach at a middle school and a high school in Pocatello. And they had their son, Dennis, back in November. And they just had concerns about childcare, if they could find something that was affordable and quality. So what they did was staggered their 12 weeks of FMLA leave to provide care for him. And then next school year, Jane's going to step back from teaching and take a leave of absence to continue providing that care. But something else that it's important for listeners to know is that most teachers nationwide do not get paid parental leave. Only 4 states in the country offer that. And so they take FMLA and their job's protected, but it's all unpaid. So teachers are in a position where they're left to cobble together sick and personal days to offset the loss of pay. And in the case of the Roberts, after they used up their sick and personal, they still missed out on a combined 9 weeks of pay. So to make up for that, they've had to borrow against Jane's life insurance policy. And it's just a look at what this looks like on the ground.
No, yeah, I appreciate that. And I think it's important that people understand that perspective, Carly. Christina, you've got a pretty interesting story that you're working on for Monday. And a lot of folks may not be aware of this, but there are hundreds of down ballot primary election races that really have the potential to shake up party leadership. Can you tell us more about this? Because when I say down ballot, I mean, we're talking at like what
in the
neighborhood?
Basement.
Yeah, like in literally in the basement. Totally. So explain this.
Yeah, it's something that appears on primary ballots all the time. But this year in particular, the races for precinct committeemen, I think, are going to be, and this is something that people have that have talked to have said, are going to be some of the most important races on your primary ballot, especially if you're affiliated with the Republican Party. We talked to Idaho Lieutenant Governor Jack Riggs, who said, you know, people just really need to be aware of these races. There are more contested precinct races than any time in recent memory, and quite possibly ever. But these are races, and this is something that Riggs said, was that many people don't know anything about these candidates, and it's hard to find information on them because these are like legit neighborhood level political spots. So here's kind of a breakdown of how this works. Across the state, there are more than 900 precincts, and each precinct can be represented by a different committeeman in each of the 4 political parties that the state recognizes. But again, this year, these races will be particularly important to the Idaho Republican Party, because these races for this neighborhood level political position may affect who the party elects for its own leadership positions, including the chairperson of the party. And that's a position that's held right now by Dorothy Moon. These committeemen essentially make up the county central committees for the political parties in Idaho. And these men or women who are elected are required to meet, organize their county central committees, and then elect a county chairperson and officers. So, for instance, once the Republican county central committees across the state are organized after the primary, they will be the ones who select the delegates that will attend the 2024 Idaho GOP state convention that begins in June in Coeur d'Alene. At the convention, delegates will vote on who gets to elect the chairperson of the Idaho Republican Party. And that's important because they help write and pass any changes to the party rules or to the party platform. And many people that we talked to said that what is on the line for these precinct elections is the soul or the future direction of the Idaho Republican Party. Folks on the right side of the party are advocating for a slate of precinct candidates, while people in the more moderate portion of the party are advocating for their own candidates. And that's an effort to take over the leadership of the party from Dorothy Moon. So yeah, we'll have more on this issue in a story on IdahoCapitalSun.com on Monday. And I know Melissa may want to jump here and talk a little bit more about that. But it's, I think the thing that's really hard about these races is it's extremely difficult to find information on some of these candidates. Yeah. It's not the same as a state legislator who usually has some sort of website or kind of social media presence, although we have seen some of these precinct committee people, you know, launch their own Facebook groups and things like that to try to reach voters. But yeah, in every county across the state, there are more contested precinct committee races than we've seen in a very long time. And it may have very real implications, especially mm-hmm. for the GOP.
So, Melissa, can we talk a little bit about this a little more? Because just anecdotally, I happened to be on Facebook the other day, and one of my Facebook friends had put a post up that she's running for the precinct committee position. And I literally was like, what is she talking about? Like, what is this? And I think I'm a fairly informed individual, but this was something that I had no idea about. So when Christina says, like, I mean, we're talking in the basement, but it could have a ripple effect. I'm just curious about your thoughts on this, in particular, because I think so many of us aren't aware of what this position even is.
It's a single precinct committee person might not have that much power. But when you look at the totality of who is getting into these hyper-local offices. I mean, this is your neighborhood, mm-hmm. especially if you live somewhere like Boise or Meridian. You could walk your precinct. But these are the people, as Christina said, who go to these, you know, every 2 years conventions and the winter meetings. They're the ones who vote on the rules. They're the ones who vote on the platforms and all of these things that you hear about, like adhering to the Republican Party platform and holding lawmakers accountable when they don't adhere to the platform and censuring them. These are the folks who do that. They're not just random people. Mm-hmm. They are people who are on the Republican and Democratic ballots, and especially for the Republican Party, these have become more and more contested. Now, this isn't new that these have been contested, starting about I would say about 14 years ago. A lot mm-hmm. of this is so nerdy and wonky, and I'm so sorry, but
no, that's okay.
When we started seeing these precinct races in some areas get competitive because you had grassroots activists realize that the precinct committee folks had so much power in steering the direction of the party. So when you hear people talk about, you know, wax poetic about the good old days of the Republican Party and how much it's changed, a big part of the change hasn't necessarily been the voters themselves, although there is a little bit of that. A big part of it is who is running for and winning the precinct committee races. The other part of this that makes it hard to know what's going on in these races, it's hard to find information on the candidates, but precinct committeemen don't need to file C1 or monthly campaign finance reports. So you know, when you have these competitive races that big names are running for these races too. If you look at Ada County candidates alone, you'll see sitting lawmakers on there, former lawmakers, politicians' spouses, and not just a few, multiple. And we don't know who is funding the mailers that are starting to go out. We don't, you know, it's not always transparent. Certainly you can't go onto, you know, voteidaho.gov and look up all of this information like you can with the lawmakers, where it really is this new era. When we're talking about how bonkers expensive some of the legislative races are, this is part of that too. It's not just the legislative primaries. It's a whole new era of elections and how these primaries are shaking out.
Well, and here's what's interesting to me, Melissa, as I mentioned, a Facebook friend, I mean, she even puts on her, I don't know if you want to call it an ad, but it's, you know, asking for her vote. She says a common sense Idaho Republican, right? So that goes to what you're saying about maybe you don't have much power as one person, but a collective whole could truly shift what's going on in the Republican Party. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. That's what's going on. And you know, you could fight all day about what a common sense Republican means or about what a true conservative means. And that's where these fights shake out within the Republican Party. But at the heart of these, you know, this Republican fratricide, where with all of the infighting, a lot of it boils down to who makes up these county committees and who gets elected to these precinct level positions. And we started seeing them become competitive about 2010. Before that, you couldn't pay people enough to run for those seats. Mm-hmm. So many of them were vacant. Certainly most of them were unchallenged. And then we started seeing that change. And now it's this tidal wave of competitive precinct races that really has the possibility to shape not just party politics, because as you know, what happens with the party helps direct what lawmakers vote on and how mm-hmm. they vote. So not just what's in the bills, but what those vote totals end up being. So there are mm-hmm. really big implications for these precinct position races.
Well, I appreciate the conversation, Christina and Melissa, because this is something where, yeah, I mean, can we get in the weeds? Can it be nerdy? Yes. But I think it's helping to maybe educate voters on, A, what these positions are and what they have the potential of doing. And then, you know, finally, why they're so important.
And there's so much else here, too, with, you know, counties, what's endorsing slates of candidates. Like, they know mm-hmm. how important this is too. County central committees very much have a, who's in power right now. They know that they have a stake in who gets elected on May 21st.
Yeah, I just think it's really fascinating. I really appreciate the conversation. So Carly, you sat down with an Idaho mom who's been advocating for her child with disabilities. Can you kind of walk us through that? Because as you said in your report, this has been daunting for her.
Yeah, so it started when she went to drop off her 6-year-old son at kindergarten last fall. Her name's Kendra Scheid, and she was dropping him off at a Pocatello Elementary School. And she found the classroom was in a state of chaos. And this is what's called a resource room. So it's all special education students. But students were screaming, trying to run away. They were being restrained by teachers. Diapers were being changed in the corner of the classroom. Her child was going to be learning with just other students with disabilities with no access to neurotypical peers. And this classroom was also in the basement of a school built in 1925 that she says didn't have ADA accessibility. And she didn't feel comfortable leaving her child there alone. So she stayed with him 3 days to see if it improved. It didn't. So she disenrolled him. And that started a journey that's still going on today. She went back and forth with the district to try to remedy it. And ultimately, she ended up filing a complaint with the State Department of Education. They investigated and found the district was out of compliance on 4 of 5 allegations, meaning they were violating federal special education law. Okay. So now they're having to do some training and some things like that. But I think what's notable about this is not unique. I've been doing some reporting on this, and in the past year, there have probably been dozens of districts statewide where they've had similar investigations that found some wrongdoing. And I think it speaks to some broader issues statewide. We know that there's a special education funding gap of anywhere from $40 to $80 million. Idaho's special education manual has been found to be out of compliance with federal law, meaning students have been wrongly denied services for years. And on top of that, it's like infamously difficult to recruit and retain special education teachers. So there's a lot going on in the special education realm. There are some possible remedies in the works. The manual is supposed to be revised this summer. And then next session, there's supposed to be more legislation popping up for a vote on addressing that special education funding gap.
Well, thanks for that report on that. Christina, we need to talk about a really big deadline today in regards to elections.
Yes. So today is the last day to request an absentee ballot in Idaho for the May 21st primary election. Completed absentee ballots must be returned to county elections offices by or on May 21st. A great place to get started is a resource that we've talked about before. It's called voteidaho.gov, which is the website that's run by the Idaho Secretary of State's office. Registered voters can request an absentee ballot there and get up-to-date voting information on, you know, who is filed to run, voting deadlines, early voting locations, et cetera. This is something that's really cool. You can also check your voting record. I just did it as I was kind of waiting for the segment. It'll tell you if you have an absentee ballot request pending or if your absentee ballot has been received. So you can always go and check and see where you're at in that kind of timeline or process. And I'd also just love to remind people that Idaho still allows for same day voting registration at early voting locations and on election day with proper identification and address verification, like a utility bill. But today is the last day. There are thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people who vote absentee in Idaho, but today is the last day to request your ballot. And then a reminder that it must be in by May 21st, by election day. So I just really encourage people to get involved with voting. I think it's so important. I think it's a responsibility of us all to be, informed and involved. Mm-hmm. So get out there and vote.
Okay. And Melissa, we've only got about 3 minutes left, but I really want to spend the last bit of our time today chatting with you first off, the Idaho Press Club Awards were handed out last Saturday. So congrats to everybody who won awards. Melissa, you're the president of the Idaho Press Club. So I know you have so much that you do and so much on your plate with this. But one of the things you were able to do during the awards ceremony last weekend was announced the launch of the organization's new 501c3. So can you tell us a little bit more about this?
This is something that I have wanted to do for years. And in the last last half year, it finally came together. The Idaho First Amendment Alliance is a 501c3 organization recognized by both the IRS and the Idaho Secretary of State. We formed it to protect the right of the free press and citizens to access public records. As you know, and we've talked about on this show before, Idaho's public record law favors openness, but the only way to challenge denials or over redactions or over exorbitant fees is to sue, which takes a lot of time and a lot of money. And most journalists and most citizens don't have that. And so even though we have won two major public records lawsuits in the last 5 years, we've had to let other challenges go without doing anything about them, other violations go unchallenged. The Idaho First Amendment allowance will allow us to raise money to both educate journalists and to fight for their rights to these public records, and will also help us raise money for litigation fees. You can find out more at IdahoFirstAmendmentAlliance.com. You can donate to our efforts. I am so excited about this, Gemma. I cannot tell you how excited
I am.
It is
so necessary. So congrats for being able to get that launched and off the ground. We'll make sure we also put a link on our website to that website you mentioned. I want to thank all of you so much for being a part of Idaho Matters today. Big thank you to Carly Flandreau with the Idaho Ed News, Ian Max Stevenson with Idaho Statesman, Christina Lords, the editor-in-chief of the Idaho Capital Sun, and Melissa Davlin, host of Idaho Reports on Idaho Public Television. Remember, Idaho Reports airs tonight. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.